Hello, and welcome to Open Finance, the podcast that believes the future of financial services is open and brought to you by Finastra. I'm your host, Emily Nicole, Technology Editor at City AM, and today we're joined by Mark Shaler, the founder of sustainable innovation consultancy APE, and Akbar Jaffa, Finastra's Chief Strategy Officer and Chief of Staff. On this episode, we're debating the power of fintech to disrupt the industry and asking what is next on the fintech agenda. So to get started, let's talk briefly about what we mean when we talk about the word disruption, especially in fintech.
So disruption is one of those words that 10 years ago had some meaning and relevancy, and increasingly that's been watered down. So I wrote a book called Do Disrupt 8 years ago and it felt okay. And now I'm ever so slightly embarrassed when I hand it over, because the word disruption has become a kind of verbal trinket in the jewellery box of business lingo, and has, I think, has lost a little bit of its potency. However, for me, disruption is changing the pace or the direction of what you're doing as an organisation or as an individual. Now, that doesn't need to be revolutionary. That can be something as simple as being able to pay your check into your bank. I know these words are old now, but some people still do pay by checks, by taking a photograph of it and emailing it. Or it could be a whole new global payment system based on Bitcoin. Disruption doesn't need to be out there. It just needs to change the trajectory of what you're doing.
And so who do you think is impacted most by the way disruption is changing, not just in fintech, but in financial services in general? I mean, what would you say on that, Akbar?
Well, so, you know, just to pick up Mark's point a little bit around the disruption, I think historically sometimes disruption was viewed as winners and losers. And I do think there is a move now where disruption kind of is linked to innovation, but you can also collaborate to innovate. So folks can all win together, right? And so if you look at impacts, I think there's different impacts. So for consumers, I think a lot of the time, these new tech companies, particularly fintech companies, it's about time compression. How can I get my activity done quicker, right? Whether it's putting a check and taking a photograph, they don't have to go to the bank, so they save time. Whether it's getting a mortgage and finding a house. And I think you'll increasingly see banks and new fintechs kind of deal with the whole user experience, where they get a positive impact from not just asking for a mortgage from a bank, but actually the bank helping them find a house, find a lawyer, find a loan, then they move into the house, and then they get the services that they need for that. And so I think the disruption we're talking about will be solved through collaboration, and so have a great impact on consumers, but also businesses as well, right? So businesses have a lot of their money tied up in balance sheets, for example, but doing quicker payments, for example, you see big impacts occurring there, essentially through technology-enabled services.
And what about in the broader sense as well, like, you know, the economy, the country, how does that benefit from fintech innovation?
Well, fintech is the blood, it's the heartbeat of the country and of organisations and of businesses. If the money doesn't flow, nothing flows. And anything that can speed the money up and not just speed it up, but kind of have more relevancy. So the person that's done the work gets the money rather than someone that sits in the middle. And we'll probably talk about blockchain later. But that's one of the potential benefits of some of that disruption. Anything that improves that improves the health of the nation. If, as soon as we make resources available, we can do something with them. My money is pointless in my bank account. It's working hardest when it's not in my bank account and it's buying services or improving my life in some way. So all of those things will help us as individuals and free up working capital so that businesses can innovate. Enterprise gets a bad rap as creating many of the world's social problems, and it probably has, but it's the only thing that's going to sort them out. And the way I look at fintech is it's fuel to make it do more good.
Yeah, so I think in terms of the economy, you know, a good example of that is there's a lot of wastage, I think people recognize today, around trade. And so, you know, in trade, there are many actors, right? There are customs, there are businesses that want to sell goods and services. There are banks involved in terms of letter and credit. And I think technology and fintechs and collaboration really has a big opportunity to free up trade. You know, I don't want to go into the Brexit process, but we've already seen that, you know, a lot of people talk about frictionless trade. What does that actually mean? It means bringing together different actors, customs, banks, businesses, marketplaces to publish their goods and services globally. And I think you can see huge impacts occurring through collaboration of fintechs and these different actors to coming together. So I think we're at the beginning of this as opposed to the end of it, and there's a lot more to play for.
That's a really interesting point, Akbar. And, you know, Brexit fills me with fear in many, many ways. But the restriction of ability to trade, or the potential restriction of ability to trade, is one of those things. That, do you think that fintech could actually offset some of those restrictions, could be the answer to some of these challenges?
I do think so. And I think what's underlying, you know, when we say fintech is, and regulation is helping a lot around this, right? Which is essentially, we talk about the API economy, right? So underneath connecting all these different actors, you need technology and APIs, which is essentially exchanging information and data, right? To enable those actors to come together and to collaborate, to offer those services in a more productive way. So to answer your question completely, I think the fintechs, and particularly some of the new innovators in the fintechs, are providing this tech platform to enable those actors to come together. And increasingly, I think we talked about disruption at the beginning and the fact there's more collaboration with these new challenger fintechs with banks and them using the technology to enable those flows to occur. So I agree with that, yeah.
Then what isn't working in today's current system? I mean, Mark, you think that disruption has kind of evolved so much now that from 8 years ago, it's barely recognizable, whereas Akbar, you think it's just started. I mean, how can businesses then take a different approach towards innovation going forward?
It depends what kind of businesses we're talking about, right? I think one of the great things about tech startups, whether they're fintech or other, is you have management teams who are looking to essentially take a brand new approach to an existing business problem or consumer problem. And what they have, if you look at the traits they have funding. Okay, so money, interest rates are low. You can see all these new funds being set up. And so folks are getting money. Regulation is helping as well. And as I said, technology is helping. But the key thing for me is mindset and the focus of the management team to solve a particular problem and having the ability to fail at it and try again. And so that is a model that you see works well in smaller tech startups. The question for bigger businesses is how do they apply that mindset within their business? And one of the books I read recently, Geoffrey Moore, Zone to Win, talks about an organization where they essentially carve up their company, hopefully I'm describing it well, where they talk about productivity and performance zones, which is taking their existing business and driving value through that because that generates cash, but are having transformation and incubation zones. So this focus on this kind of startup mentality in larger organizations.
That's really fascinating and zips in beautifully to the point I was going to make. I think disruption is at the beginning. I think the words become hackneyed. That's my challenge with it. But I help build startups inside big businesses. I help little businesses become and think like big businesses, and I help big businesses think like little businesses. And understanding how you can stay relevant in an organization that hasn't had to do that before, that has just been so large that it's the market dominator, and people will always come to you. And the banks are classic examples of this. I did a workshop about 5 years ago for a large high street bank and dropped words like Xero, Receipt Bank and Metro into the conversation. This was with the IT team. Not one person had heard of them. And I'm not in finance and I'd heard of them. So how is that insulation occurred? What I've seen over the last 2 years is that's been stripped away. And you're absolutely right. Innovation, entrepreneurship, enterprise, these zones, I call it rebel cells, these little cells with kind of like safe blast radiuses where you can innovate and play and you're given permission to do that. And you're almost leapfrogging or avoiding the innovation team. You're giving permission to people within the business to be creative rather than saying it's just people in kooky glasses who are creative. It's everybody. And when you do that, when you give power, because we've got the digital power to innovate now, we've got the tools to test things out. As soon as you give that permission, then larger organisations, I think, can compete with smaller organisations rather than just buy them when they get to a certain size.
Yeah, that's a very good point around the cells and the zones. And, you know, when I say we're at the beginning of it, I think that is an example where certainly larger organizations are now much more aware of the challenge which is occurring to them. And so they recognize that they have to fund these ideas. They have to have the ability to fail at these ideas. You know, the folks in these businesses need to have the rope to go and make those mistakes, right? Because they recognize that if they don't make mistakes, they're not going to learn, right? So that's the mindset approach change that occurs. And that when that happens and is successful in large organizations, the advantage they have is they have the balance sheet and the distribution to be able to scale very fast. So you're really going to see when those ideas take off that they will scale extremely fast. And that'll be a new wave to watch, I think.
Completely. If we want to see the fruits of disruption, it all rests with larger organizations rather than the smaller ones. Mm.
But how do you think then these larger organizations can properly incentivize their employees to get on board with it? Because if you're in a particularly large business, your staff probably aren't used to these kinds of projects. Yeah. They're probably not used to being told, oh, well, you were working on this, but we've decided it's not working, so we're going to make you switch immediately. How can business keep their staff motivated with disruption?
Yeah, so, you know, the challenge for boards and companies that have an existing business and they want to create a new business comes back to the point Mark and I were making around zones, but that's kind of more at the operational level. You have to start at the board level and the chief exec level that kind of says, okay, you know, we have $100 to spend, you know, to just take a simple example. Mm. I'm going to put $80 on my existing business because that's, I need to continue to generate that cash flow, right? I'm going to put $20 in this zone where these folks are going to go off and try to create the future for me. And I'm going to, it may need a different culture. You may have to do things like separate buildings. You may have to do separate reporting lines. You may have to actually take them slightly outside of the organization for them to be successful because sometimes the existing culture, you know, is just too slow to change. And so at an executive level, you create these different zones and you allow those teams to go and you fund them correctly. And then once they're scaling, you can pull them back in and get the larger scaling effects.
I think that's a great example as well, because we've seen lots of times when big businesses, like, for example, HSBC, have created a separate unit in a different building to build their digital banking fund project or whatever it is, it turns into something great like Connected Money.
Yeah.
And that's done well. But then we've also seen other instances where, you know, big organizations have made incubators or accelerators in various parts and then those things haven't worked out or produced anything, you know, solid. What's your experience of that, Mark, with helping businesses?
It's a really great question. And the secret to this is the connection between the spin-off, I'll call it a spin-off, but the startup culture that you've created, the cell, and the larger organization. You need the clear blue water between the two so that the culture of the larger organization doesn't spread into the small one. And that, not always, but generally is a culture of, yeah, we've tried that before. The words that I ban in any of my innovation or startup workshops are, yes, but. You can't say yes, but we tried it. Yes, but it won't work. Yes, but the market's not ready. Yes, but we don't have the team. You can always say yes and. So you've got to build it. So by separating them, you create a culture gap, which is brilliant. But the secret is bringing that back in, because there's no point in doing something amazing over here and then watching that do well and you continue to decline. You need to be able to create a culture that accepts that level of innovation back in it. And you can do it really carefully, actually, because you get a bit of meerkatting, you get a bit of people sat in the larger organisation going, oh, what's happening over? I quite fancy a bit of that. Unilever had this when they set up the Foundry, when they did the work with Axe and a number of other brands. They created this really funky startup thing and everybody wanted to be in it. Because the challenges we face are not just about staying ahead of our competition in terms of business models. It's how we attract and retain the best talent in the world. And we'll only do that if we look like a funky place to work. And so this isn't just about staying ahead of the competition with product. This is about saying, we want the best talent in the world, because the world's shifting east and it's going to continue to shift east. And our best talent will go that way unless we can feel unbelievably agile and smart and interesting. Nobody wants to be bored at work. We're there for far, far too long now.
But I mean, the landscape as we enter this next decade has also changed for employees thinking about where they might want to work, because previously they might have had the options of, you know, startups or big financial firms. Now their options also include big tech firms. We've got companies like Facebook trying to enter the space with Libra, Google Pay, Apple and Goldman Sachs doing their credit card stuff. So how do we think that this is really going to shake up the space when it comes to disruption?
I think when we look at financial services, we've got to remember it's a pretty heavy regulated industry, right? Because it deals with people's livelihoods and money. And so actually, if you look at a lot of the unicorn fintechs in Europe, a lot of them, not exclusively all of them, but quite a lot of them, focus on non-deposit taking activity, like payments and various other things. And so there is a slight bias to get into the financial services or fintech space where maybe not a heavy regulation element is required. And so when you talk about these big tech companies, right, whether they be Google, Apple. You can see them partnering increasingly more with financial institutions, with Goldman's and various other banks. Because, you know, one thing they have is tech. The other thing they have is big balance sheets themselves, but they also have a big balance sheet of data. And so what they're trying to figure out is how do they partner with existing financial institutions and look to enter discrete elements of financial services. That's not to say they might not enter in a large way, but you've got to remember financial services is heavily regulated. And so therefore, I think, you know, they're going to look at areas where they're adjacent to their existing business and enter those markets. And you see it in different examples, whether it's Amazon in merchant lending, or you look at Apple and Apple Pay and them getting into credit cards, et cetera. So I think there'll be a lot more collaboration and partnering.
I think so. I think that co-creativity or co-reliance on disruption is super important. And, you know, Libra is really interesting, really fascinating. But I think it was the French finance minister who said it was utterly frightening because it puts at risk the sovereignty of organisations, of governments. This is really interesting. And so it frees things up maybe too much, whereas Binance is working more with governments to get the kind of regulatory elements straight. And you can begin to see how we want disruption. Government wants disruption. It wants a fintech industry that is vibrant and hungry, but it doesn't want to lose control. So that's a really fascinating dilemma. The political element of fintech, we don't talk about it much, but the opportunities are absolutely huge. If we can bring those 1.7 billion people with no bank account into enterprise, just think how powerful that is. And if we can use the same system to redistribute or better distribute, not redistribute, better distribute wealth to the people that create the value rather than the organisations that sit in the middle, then we've really democratised the system. And that is unbelievably disruptive and ever so slightly scary.
I mean, would you say it's the case that startups so far, or at least the innovation we've seen so far, hasn't been able to do that democratisation well? And so that's why big tech is now doing it almost for them or taking the charge on it?
I think these startup fintechs have democratised in places, right? So I just met a lady who started off a payment service for Africa. And essentially, she created a new payment rail for Africa where businesses and consumers were able to send payments instantly or the same day outside of the banking system, then back into the banking system. And so in the last 4 years, I think her business has gone pretty much from zero to probably carrying $1 billion of payment traffic a year. That's a service that was unavailable to someone in Kenya or South Africa or different parts of Africa, right? So I think you do see elements of that. The question is, how can she move her business from $1 billion a year to $10 billion a year? And that's where partnerships may come in, where that distribution channel enables that.
Great.
Totally. And she's still half reliant on getting it out through the traditional system. And that's, you know, you look at things like PayPal, which is yonks old now. People embraced it because it felt outside of the banks, but the gateway to it was in the bank, which is frustrating for many people. And the role of banks, just from a bricks and mortar point of view, they need to become innovation hubs. I don't want to go in and be told off for my overdraft. I want to go in and learn how not to have an overdraft. This is the role of banks. That's unbelievably disruptive, but maybe incredibly low tech. And we forget, you know, without PayPal, we would not have Tesla. We would not have SpaceX. We would not. It's enabled the accumulation of riches to then go and release to do something incredibly useful. And when we talk about startup, I know many startup founders who have sold sort of 75-80% of their business to a larger organization, and it's freed up the cash for them to go and do incredible sustainability work or new businesses that regenerate soil rather than selling drinks.
Yeah.
And that would never have happened without scale. So scale really matters in this.
Great. So today we've had a good discussion. I think we've talked about how businesses can do better with helping their staff get involved in disruption, the ways in which they can encourage disruption throughout their business in all the different zones or cells that we've used those terms, and also how big tech is now getting involved and what the future of disruption might look like. Thanks to Mark and Akbar for joining us today, and thank you to everybody who's listening. To find out more or to find our other podcasts, visit us at finastra.com or join in the conversation with hashtag Open Finance on Twitter. You can find us at @finastrafs.